Excellent. It is excellent, and it is perfect, and it is Wednesday night, and it is 7 o'clock. And on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, what we do is we explore the writings of E.J. Gold. And tonight, we're working with, we've actually gone into the Secret Talks volumes, and one that has not been made into a commercial printing, right, Ivan? It's volume number 5. It's called Work of Groups. It's an unusual book. It's not in any way, shape, or form an academic discussion of what a group is or a spiritual group or how it should be formed. Thank God. What it is a it's a exampleship of a senior group of individuals working with E.J. over a long period of time and interacting with him. And so what we do is we cull from that the various aspects that are what we call, you know, the elements of being a group. Eventually, at some point in the distant future, the host of this particular Wednesday night thing are going to accumulate those items and put them up, but that's in the future, always in the future, which will be called into question tonight. And so what we do, we, as a group, we have a element of groupness that I always point out and is critical to consider, and that's called the scribe. Now, this is like fair witness, or if you're involved a lot in the reading process, you know, we have a witness that is physically writing things down. And there's a fundamental difference between that kind of thing and absorbing the data through voice, though the Tibetans clearly thought that was a important way to do it in their book called Hearing, Freedom Through Hearing in the Bardos. We're not on that book. We finished that a couple of years ago. And right now what we're going to do is take from the prior week. Did we have some from the prior week? What are the elements of groupness that we noticed last week? And Pat's going to read those for us, please.
Work of Group number 22, Wednesday, August 16th, 2017. 1. Operations of a group. 1. We have the opportunity together to do certain things we can't do when we're not together. When we work together, we are lifted and see more. When we can see more, we should see what we can see and gather that. Because when we leave the space, we aren't there anymore. 2. The more aware we are of the dynamics of a magical space, the more potent they become because we engender them with more attention and we enliven them.
Can I make a footnote on that? George, do you happen to have HBM around at all?
Absolutely, in my hands right now.
And what is the chapter number for what is entitled Bringing the Woman to Life?
Bringing the Woman to Life is Oh, 15.
Chapter 15. And that'll underscore the point that Pat was just making to us, okay? Very, very critical. Go back and read the chapter. It's worth a lift of it. All of this stuff is worth a lift. It really is. Go ahead, Pat, please.
And in our noticing them, they are enhanced more. And with our awareness on the dynamics, we become true voyagers in the space, and we operate within it. I'm going to read that whole number 2 again.
Okay.
The more aware we are of the dynamics of a magical space, the more potent they become because we engender them with more attention and we enliven them. And in our noticing them, they are enhanced more. And with our awareness on the dynamics, we become true voyagers in the space and we operate within it. Three, part of what we do as a group invocationally is to enliven the space so we can all ascend.
Right.
Four.
Right. Nice. Thank you.
Four, there's a dynamic called sociocracy or sociocracy.
Sociocracy.
Or sociocracy, where a group consciously works together, making decisions, and at some point, the group mind comes out. When the group mind is present, one's brain is gone. A person is sacrificing their mechanicality. Five, this sounds like not just moving myself into essence, perception, vibration, but also coaching myself to be aware of the essence vibration. Note, the group was invited to do the last hour of life exercise. When you're in the midst of your day, take a moment to reflect back and ask yourself, how was that last hour? How did it go? Am I taking the mantle of responsibility of these ideas that have been presented here? BJ's given fine tools that we should use in a fine manner. Suggestion. Reflect on the concept of feeling the sensation within you of responsibility. If you can see it, you can naturally grab it. Thank you.
Thank you, Marvette. That was really a good...
That's good, because I wasn't here last week, and that was very nice to
It was this idea of once you start learning the ideas and you get the data, and I think I pointed out about that, is you sense the weight of the responsibility you have. It's second nature now to Pat.
Mm.
It's second nature to her. And it just flows because of her, maybe partly just because of her deep grasping of the data, it's this sense of responsibility flows. There's a simplicity to it. It's not the human level of responsibility like the dogged, I must do it. There's a abundance to it, and it's organic. It's quite organic. So anyway, this particular section of thank you, Pat, for I've broken them into five chapters, and we're supposed to be on 41 through 50, but somehow accidentally I went back to chapter 40 just briefly.
Okay.
And on page 100, we didn't bring a book. You okay? Okay. On page 100, in the middle of that paragraph on page 100, there's a phrase, and listen to this carefully. The present is the father of a new future. Wow. The present is the father of the new future. It gives birth to the future. So what are you doing now? All this stuff we were talking about last time about the last hour of life. What was your last hour of life?
Yeah.
How was it? And it is, so how you're doing is it gives birth. You are the creator of your future. We are the creator of our future, period. Okay. I just wanted to point that. I wanted to grab that real quick.
Yeah, that was
reemphasize
that was very strong the week before last.
That's right.
Here,
it was the week
yeah.
before last.
Mm-hmm.
And then right now we spent a whole time on chapter
41,
and now we're on chapter 42,
mm.
which I'm going to just skip over. Okay.
Yes.
It's just one paragraph. Go ahead and read it. It's noted. It's worth noting. Chapter 43, then let's go ahead and read through that. It's a fun one to read, and we'll do another round robin, and we'll start. George and Harry, do you have your books with you?
Yes.
Okay.
Chapter
43. Silverdale, do you want to get started with paragraphs 1 and 2 on page 104?
Who did you
and
ask?
Silverdale, if you could go ahead and read paragraphs 1 and 2 of
okay.
chapter 43 on 104.
Yeah.
Then Harry will follow, then Pat, and then Ivan. And then Dan. And go ahead. There's not enough paragraphs. Keep going. Go ahead and get us started.
Chapter 43. Sheep among wolves. The group sat together and talked for a long time, trying to determine their common aim. She talked to us about the little death, which occurs every night with rebirth every morning. He said, if we stay up all through the real night, we go through the bardos. But during the big day, we can make changes.
If we attain the seventh body, the highest level of consciousness possible for a man, even this is subject to change over a long period of time, what remains is the quality of the work we do.
Most of the people who come to work with G are sheep when they are with him, but suddenly become capable when they go away. They are then wolves among white sheep. In prison camps, they found that if they eliminated the 5% who were wolves, the other 95%, the sheep, were docile and could be made to do anything. Most people are sheep.
To be a wolf among sheep is nothing. To be a wolf among wolves is something else. We need wolves among wolves who can be sheep among sheep.
I just thought that was important because a lot of us need to learn to bring our strengths out and stop being sheep in any environment that we are and learn to be a wolf. And when it's time to be compassionate and kind, you need to know how to exercise that too. It all comes from your sensing and your heart, but sometimes we need more strength of character, all of us do, and sense of presence. And you get that being a wolf. Okay? Anyway, I just thought that was a lovely little chapter, and I wanted to take the time to read it. Now, Dan, do we have anybody online tonight? Just two? Nine? Okay. All right, so everybody, we're now going to go to chapter 44. Chapter 44 is called the Skyhook Exercise. So Should we read this one? Have you read it already? Let's go ahead and we'll go ahead and read it. Okay.
Yeah.
Same order, please, if you would get us started, George.
Okay. I'm going to read paragraphs 1 and 2.
Please.
Chapter 44, Skyhook Exercise.
He said, Chapter 44, Skyhook Exercise.
If we could make an organization without identification, it would be a good beginning. Our work is all manifestations. So in order to work, we must have something to work with. He asked if anyone had any matches. People reached into their purses and pockets to pull out matches. He pointed out that some of us have a tendency, when asked a question, to answer with the moving center. Rather than answering the question, a person who does this will get up and start to get whatever is asked about, even though he never asked anyone to give him matches, just asked if anyone had them.
And another example of that would be, if I asked you right now, do you know what time it is?
I don't.
Good answer. Go ahead.
Yes,
please.
Or no.
That's correct.
To the question, can you explain the theory of relativity? Yes, I can, would be the correct answer in this sense. Exactness is not expected in our society. We are expected to assume, to fill in, to hear what is unsaid as well as what is said.
Sometimes exactness in answering can seem to others who are impatient and, quote, too clever for anybody's good, end quote.
Keep going.
To be a negative manifestation, to be perverse. The present impressions and their effect on the machine set the stage for the next manifestation.
Okay.
Is that ever clever,
yes.
Huh? Wow.
I wanted you to read that.
Yeah.
Do the next two.
If we settle for liberation, eventually we forget and are drawn back into identity. Liberation is eventually forgotten. The real world is always omnipresent, vibrating. In linear time, it might end, but in real time, it is always there. Even a Buddha can be drawn back into it eventually.
The awakened one asks, just what is wrong with an endless round of death and rebirth? To resist something is to give it power, to be an involuntary slave to it.
Keep going.
Mentally draw a picture of air, of food, of impressions, of a moment. Because these can be symbolized, it gives us a hint that even a moment is a substance. Every single moment is an eternal part of creation.
Do you want to read a little bit then for a while? Yeah.
There is only one substance with which to make the universe,
and only one moment in which to make it. Time is really the measure of motion, strung together mentally in an apparently logical sequence to give the appearance of the flow of time. That is the theory. Here is the practical. From each moment, we can potentially extract a substance we will call quality.
Okay. Care to say that? Hold on.
Real presence will bring us to the age of creation, where things do not just happen. The price we pay for awakening is to be alone.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Pat, take us out.
Make an aim bigger than yourself. That is our sky hook. A sky hook is not real, but it functions as real. Now, we can only imagine what it would be like to really do. If we have being, we can do. Continuation of activation of presence, we can call aim. Aim takes will, authority over the machine. This becomes self-initiation. Real doing to extract every bit of essence, substance from every moment we are alive. Destiny is destiny. Our paths are our paths. What could set us apart from our destiny? To live with quality. That is our hope. Hope, in this sense, gives faith a new meaning.
Q. So we cannot pay nature during the moment of extraction unless we have a being and can do. That is, have authority over the machine and its centers. G, how else could it be? I wanted to take a minute and just answer the question, what the heck does he, go ahead, Pat.
So, we had an individual share, knowingly share, her last years of life, as we had two individuals that came here knowing that they were not going to have a lot of time. And the individual that I'm recalling at the moment was set several very specific tasks by EJ in preparation for a year and a day. And the other individual who came here was given the tools to do what she needed to do, but not a specific task. Just thinking about the qualities of this, I was at both of their desks. And it's an interesting component, this description here, this wording is so precise. We cannot pay nature during the moment of extraction. I mean, you know, that's like the big dentist in the sky. He's going to pull you out.
That's right.
You don't have that tooth anymore, man. You're like loose. Unless we have being and can do, that is, have authority over the machine and its centers. And I'm just recalling this because it was so clear. There was comment in the house in both places there was comment in the house about the, oh, I don't know, we're going to use language here that's not exactly precise, the image that we have of their liftoff. And in both cases, it was remarked by those who were present and also by others in the community who are aware of it about the intentionality of it. It was strong, very strong intentionality. And this describes that, the magnitude of that, that effort for actual pull out, you know, release from physical form cannot be done by wishing or hoping or praying or any of that stuff, you know. It actually requires being substance.
That's
right. Being substance.
Right.
Very interesting. I had never thought about those events in this context.
Beautiful. But it answers the question I posed. What is meant by quality of life here then? And isn't that what they demonstrated,
yes,
these two individuals, who I know they are? Didn't they demonstrate a quality
mm-hmm.
of life?
Yeah.
So how do we frame our lives in a way that we can say, that was good, that was a life well lived. This is last hour of life, well lived. These individuals could say that. They were in the midst of that as they were working. So reflect on yourself. What does it mean to live a life of high quality, of quality, a life filled with quality? We can do that. Okay.
Now there's a very strong clue here. Like, well, there's a lot of clues here, but the one I'm looking at is at the top of page 8. It says, make an aim bigger than yourself. And then it describes what is aim. Continuation of activation of presence, we can call aim. So that's a distinction between any other thing that you might be doing ever, is to have a continuous activation of presence. That's called aim.
So what I wanted to do, and that's the exact context, is let's say out loud an example of your skyhook. So let's see what we think about. What is a skyhook then? It's, first of all, it kind of has to be something you can see, right? I mean, it's conceivable, you can sense it, something.
You mean it's not imagined? Is that what you mean, or? Yeah, go ahead, Ivan. I can hear your brain chirping over there. Not your brain. I didn't mean that. Forgive me.
My brain? Marvet needs a phone?
Go ahead, Ivan.
Well, I was just looking for the definition that he had here of doing this exercise. He follows it with, now we can only imagine what it would be like to really do. If we have being, we can do. I mean, I think he's associating this skyhook with my aspiration, my imagination, my formulation of what I could do with being, which I may not presently have, or I may not be constantly invoking or sitting at in
but,
around.
But the point I want to make on that is that you may be able to see something different than I do. Like Pat sees something very different than I do. But it's clear and distinct for her. And for me, there are things I see, but...
Okay, I get what you're saying.
It's like, not... Yeah. But for some reason, I can see it.
Yeah.
in this particular envelope, mm-hmm. it's there. Okay?
Yeah, Marvette.
Go ahead, Marvette.
Okay. Well, I see Skyhook as something that, first of all, in order to be working with a Skyhook, you have to be in motion. That's how I see it. Each is always encouraging us, you know, in order to be really doing work, you have to be in motion. And he's given so many tools. He continues to give so many tools, so many mediums with which to work.
One of his great geniuses.
Yeah, things to do. And the thing is that in solving the problems of doing some of those things, the creativity, the force is flowing through, and that is acting, in how I understand it, as a skyhook for one. And so, of the way you're following through on a path of your aim of I'm using this to work with, like we know that there are some people that are doing jewelry, and they just are continuing, not just making jewelry, but then they're marketing it, and then what it requires to go and then interact with people to introduce it and to get what you need to make it, and you know, solving all those problems to make something manifest from the ethers is a medium of working, how I see it. And so, but if you don't have such a big aim or a big project, something outside of yourself, you can, like he's given baby steps of a practice. You can do something for 5 minutes a day as a practice, and you can use that. He didn't recently use the term skyhook, but I am going to equate that with you could use a practice as a skyhook, and I feel in my life I'm using my practice in that way. Because I just do. I won't go into details there. So you know, and there's some practices he's given that you go. I don't know why this is gonna get me anywhere, but if you continue to pursue it, the skills, like we saw something in Sci-Fi Radio Theater, the cross skills that certain activities like playing a guitar with bringing a character to life in a science fiction story, there are cross skills there.
Sure.
And they're enlivening. They enliven you and they enliven the space around you and give you lots of opportunity to work.
Yeah.
I think one of the ways I connected with what you were saying, Marbet, about the practices, in the way I understand the skyhook, is rather than start doing it only for yourself and with a purpose of stop being so neurotic or I want to be a better person, but rather than that, you start doing it and actually you open a space for others to come to a practice. As you do it, you are also inviting other people. Then you are creating a name that is bigger than yourself. And it's not about only you and serving your needs or your desires, but you are putting that into service of something that is actually beneficiating others besides yourself.
Let me ask you a question. Is Paula expressing what her skyhook is? And her.
Yeah.
It sounded to me like she was very close to saying, "This is my skyhook."
Yeah, that's what I heard.
So I guess it's like throwing a line out. You know, it's like, and in a certain way, it's like also declaring, it's taking a stand, it's putting your staff in the ground saying, here's where I stand. I make this stand.
Microphone, camera, telephone.
That is like the Bodhisattva ball. when you actually take it and decide to go for it.
Yeah. So I thought listen, I understand this is an academic thing that I'm putting out here. It's not so much what the answer is, but it's the fear, it's the effort of throwing something into the pool for others to see. There's something magical about that as well, like declaring a position. I'm not trying to be finality about it, but it's the exercise of doing it that is exciting. And Dan, I'm just saying,
doing it.
How many people? We have 9 people online? 10 people online. And so I'd like to ask everybody online, maybe people don't know what an example might be.
Maybe people don't know what an example might be.
Of such a thing.
Perhaps.
Paula just gave an example.
Yes, perhaps
she did.
You could play back the last 3 seconds.
Hang on.
Oh, yes. You could also use one of those supremely fine references that you find in ethical work on self.
Okay, here we go. No. Here we go. Okay, in practical work on self. My book's falling apart.
Yes.
Chapter 11 is called The Centrum of Gravity Question. Now, I really wish Michelle had been here. This is one of the 2 great chapters that she has for in practical work on self. It's of great interest to her. And we went through this. We used to have this morning thing that we did for just a half hour, maybe it was an hour, I don't remember. We'd cover a chapter in practical work on self. Sometimes we'd read the same chapter over and over again 10 times. It was every morning, every single morning. So the centrum of gravity question is an essential question which we use to create slight discomfort to keep ourselves off balance in relation to the machine's ordinary mechanical state of self-oblivion. And so EJ, knowing who he's dealing with in this particular chapter, which you can read in your practical work on selves, you just list off things like, what becomes of dreams during the day? It's like, what does it mean to sacrifice the suffering of the machine? Who exactly in us desires change, and what kind of change is wished for? What exactly is the meaning of redemption? What is it that can suffer redemption? How can we create necessity for higher bodies? What influence does our conditioning have on our attitudes, decisions, moods, ability to be receptive to new ideas?
So when you read those out of that chapter, it strikes me as something that's important for people to not be concerned about. Not all questions are relevant for all folks, and certainly not all questions are relevant at each moment in time. So some questions that, as you know, a newbie are going to be, oh yeah,
that's
I'm going to get
yeah.
my hands on that. I'm going to grab that.
Good mic.
And that's, you know, and that's where you begin. You begin this learning of a certain different relationship to everything else, because you have a question between your ordinary life and the unveiling of everything else that is or isn't. So I wanted to answer your question because you did pose it in the email.
I did. Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't figure out if I should answer the question as I have answered it over the years or if I should answer the question as I'm answering it now.
Now.
And I decide that for now I am relying on the formulation that I have posed to myself, and I can't remember quite exactly when I put it, but it's a series of opposites. It's in the form of gratitude. It's a formulation that takes me from breath to no breath, life to no life, service to receiving service. And those three things, I balance back and forth, each one of those, either as pondering or as reflecting, or, this is the new part, this is the part that I'm getting now, because I don't think that I have a whole lot more time for being in a body and living a life. I'm using the time to observe the reflections that are coming back to me in the context of those formulations. That's the new thing.
Anybody else ready to say something, either online, type it into the chat, Dan, or Harry?
Silverdale,
if you'd like to say. Anybody here? Anything online? Nothing. Yeah. Go ahead.
I can speak if you want an icebreaker or the usual experimental subject.
Thank you, Ivan. You finally showed up.
Speaking of habits, yeah.
And you know,
this discussion. I read this chapter, and I really resonate with this with the word quality,
yeah,
with this concept. And what I really like about that is that it's not technical. That doesn't seem to be to me to be a mental concept. It has to do again with that, with sensing and intuition. Like, how do I know when I'm experiencing quality, gathering quality? Well, I mean, I can't measure it. It's not like 3 milligrams of quality or something, you know, or even like 3 minutes of quality. It's something that I have to be in touch with. I have to intuit that quality. I have to get a sense of it by on the job training, you know, by time and grade. But this discussion here is reminding me of something interesting, which is that when I first went to a study group, a circle like this,
yeah,
and I wanted to get in touch with these ideas and do, you know, the big 24 and do practices and do exercise, and I think that I actually had a really strong aspiration. I had a drive. I wanted to get out of my ordinary life. I wanted to not be stuck, you know, just like being a graduate student or just being, you know, part of a family circle or not being going to a job and being an employee. And so I wanted to be this some kind of, you know, walking Zen monk, you know, in everyday life and have transformed my life and so on. And I realized after this many years right now, this thinking about what I would say for a skyhook, I'm thinking right now, I would be transported, I think. I would be transformed if when I did my everyday obligations, when I walked into a classroom, for instance, to teach English composition, you know, if that, when in the microcosm, in what I had to teach there and what I was obligated to do, and I was doing, say, ordinarily in a more or less mechanical way, if I could be cultivating this state of being and gathering quality and having that communicate through the vehicle, whatever that microcosm is, you know, without anybody even knowing it necessarily, have it communicate being and resonate and vibrate and raise the vibrations of the people, yeah, that I was working with, sure, participating with.
Yeah.
And I think that would be, you know, what I'm saying is I now think that, like, you know, what would be the use of me going to meditate in a cave, let's say, or actually joining a monastery or trying to gather this quality by sitting cross-legged or do exercises alone? I would like to arrive at doing this in rooms that I already walk into and that I'm already obligated to be in. Yeah.
Either Silverdale or Harry, if you'd like to speak, that'd be fine.
Well, David, it seems to me that any work that we can do, even if it's a something small, can be fashioned into a skyhook. And also, the habits we develop become our skyhook. These are the habits that will carry us through. We start with trying to remain present in all that we are doing. It's not an easy task. But it transforms the nature of the work, and it seems to create a habit of the descent, a descending habit of being present.
You know, and just to toss in my two cents, I appreciate, Ivan, you drawing our attention back to the word quality. The reason that the substance quality is so important, to be able to extract the substance quality from every moment is the basis and the means by which we're able to acquire and grow being and presence. And so you know, this is such a dramatic thought. It's what we come to understand through the totality of what EJ has passed on to us is that creation exists all in one moment, and for that reason, the absolute exists in a pure form throughout all of creation. And what we're trying to do is resonate with the purity of the absolute in its uncreated state as it permeates the totality of creation. And the degree to which we can take our human biological machine and begin to vibrate sympathetically in every moment with that the purity of that absolute uncreated in the one moment of creation is the degree to which we're extracting for our own benefit this substance quality, and that substance quality, as it accumulates, produces personal being. Now, I just don't like this word skyhook at all. My first feeling, of course, was to associate it with in basketball, you have something called a skyhook. And for those familiar with basketball, you just kind of throw a ball out of your arm up over your head and swoosh, it goes through the net, skyhook. That means that you're so good at extracting this substance quality that you're actually achieving you're demonstrating the skill of a basketball player doing a skyhook. Now, as we've been talking, of course, I went into my my Webster's dictionary, and its definition of a skyhook is a hook conceived as being suspended from the sky. And I suppose that's what most of us are thinking, a hook of some kind that is suspended from the sky. And if I go down that road of imagery, I'm thinking to myself, well, you almost want to like hang yourself by your collar on that hook so you can look down on the earth, in which case you're really in a position of crucifixion, let's say. And in this case, you become the absolute, observing this kind of messy creation. You've been crucified on the cross of creation by suspending yourself from this sky hook. So anyway, those are just some of my thoughts.
I love it. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have some in the chat.
We have some on the chat.
Go ahead, Dan.
Just in reference to that, I thought that a skyhook is actually the name of a hook that's used on cranes in the construction industry.
There's several kinds of skyhooks, including the one that old Lou Alcindor perfected.
That's what I was thinking of, Lou Alcindor's Skyhook.
And then there's also in the Crane, it's a Skyhook. In aeronautics, for what do they call those planes that don't have motors? It's just
gliders.
Gliders. There's a Skyhook.
Yes.
That they utilize as well.
Yeah.
But
oh, that's
the spirit in this particular sentence.
I think that you can tell from the context of what EJ's saying here that it is the definition that Silverdale read. You know, it's pulling yourself up into the sky by hooking onto it, which is something imaginary.
Definitely. Go ahead.
So we have some comments from Bernie LaPont. Ready to accept that all my effort will end in nothing. In a way, make the effort, but be free of the result. And Gopalt says,
It's difficult. Go ahead.
Gopalt says, my job work is especially intense right now. How can I bring some elements of the teaching into my day-to-day interactions with my patients? Then he says, OMG exactly parallels what Ivan is saying right now. Tianjo says, any work we, quote, do can be fashioned into a skyhook, it would seem. The habits we develop becomes our skyhook. Muscle Spark says, aim bigger than myself. Will my actions and expressions benefit others? Is my focus on that which will benefit them or myself? And then he adds, compassion, laws of hospitality, and non-interference, helpful to that aim. And Grocki says, extract quality from every moment. Love it. For me, related and relevant is an oft-repeated refrain from Norton Street Vids. Everything is everything.
What we're doing is, in this chapter, EJ says, uses this term, set a skyhook, like an aim in the sky, right? And it reminded me of practical work on self, the centrum of gravity question that we went over so many times, and how lovely that was for everybody. And Grocki was part of that, and I remember him setting one, and I actually wrote down what he had indicated at the time. But, and so just like asking if people would like to share any skyhook that they may have, and a few people shared online and on the phone, on the chat, a couple of people shared here. But I'd like to go ahead and say something. For me, that there's this the term of seeking redemption and redeeming, like redeeming my ticket that I got. I was given a ticket when I was born, and I'm working to redeem it. I'm not quite sure where the redemption booth is in the carnival, but I'm looking for it. And I know I'm looking for it. And I know I'm in the right direction. I just also know I haven't quite got there yet. And so when I'm interacting, that's quite prevalent in my brain. And I know that when the mechanicality of the machine takes over, I know that is not in line with that goal of redeeming this chalice that has been given to me, that it's something else. So a lot of it has to do with cleansing the vessel, and cleansing the vessel, I don't know how I'm doing yet, but so it has a lot to do with that. And
your comment and the conversation about quality reminded me of this song, Who Will You Surrender To? and we read it on the Sunday show, and in a paragraph it says talks about grace, and it says that, well, grace can be your friend or your enemy, but that you won't get it if you are, I don't remember exactly what it says, but it's something about being against, if you're kind of fighting or, you know, against something. So quality, it involves that grace, you know, no matter where you are, in what circumstances you are, being in the present and moving through that, completely, fully engaging into the sensations, not falling into those, but engaging and experiencing them. And the more gracefully you can do that process and willingly, the more, I mean, the easier will be for you to transcend.
Gracchi adds, also, a la Bhakti Yoga, even if we don't know what we are doing or if our efforts come to naught, if we offer them up, they can still prove useful. That's my skyhook. Similar to, may all these efforts be used for the benefit of all beings everywhere. Then he says, what David just said reminds me of what EJ says about paying our debt to great nature.
So I wanted to point something out that has struck me about this sharing. First of all, I really appreciate the effort when people make an effort to speak of them from themselves. And I want to point out how utterly different each one was.
Mm-hmm.
There was just such uniqueness in what everybody, each person shared. It was them. And yet, we've read all this literature.
Mm-hmm.
We've read all about presence and quality and attention. We know all that stuff. But boy, when you hear it, it's like hearing it through the mouths of babes. It's fresh and it's presented. And, you know, you say about grace, when we are in that space of quality and we can surrender to the space around us, we will be surprised from time to time with grace, and we'll be filled with grace. You really want to read the Christian mystics and they talk about grace. They're just filled with the grace of the love of the Lord, and it's just a lovely thing. We can be surprised from time to time, and then our life is far from mechanical, and we are freed from the old whatever.
There's a line here that's on the bottom of page 107, last paragraph.
Right.
It says, real presence will bring us to the edge of creation where things do not just happen. The price we pay for awakening is to be alone. And on the next page, of course, there's a description of the what is an aim and that it is being that can do. And it seems like every single sentence here has a flavor. You know, like this is a whole meal.
Yes,
it's actually not just a meal, it's a banquet. No. But every line here has a flavor, and it's like if you can pick up in your hand, I was in the store today and looking at the spices and buying some bottles of herbs, organic herbs, and making sure that they were just the thing I wanted and no extra stuff. And you have to be able to evaluate, you have to be able to discern what it is that you either have in your hand or that you're looking for. You know, what is this thing? We labeled it quality. And one of the flavors of quality seems to be the price we pay for awakening is
yep.
to be alone. So as an aspect of just carrying this forward, the exercise you know, the last hour of life is one way of reflection. This is another way where you start kind of touching the essence sense of quality. So where is it that you're going to find that? You know, it's stated, it's at least that you are alone. And I don't mean not sitting in a room with a bunch of people.
No.
So it's like there's clues in every single paragraph here, but, you know, sometimes I thick head. Don't get it. But anyway, I thought I would share that with people because it seemed to come across very strongly for me.
And we didn't, that one struck me as also, and I'm okay with being alone. I'm okay with that form of aloneness. Because when you're in that form of aloneness, which is utterly different than loneliness, when you're in that form of aloneness, from time to time, you run across a friend. And then your aloneness makes sense. But we understand the path. We're all experienced officer kids, everybody here. We know that. Take that on and strengthen that, become a wolf. So, how are we doing over there, Dan? Okay, good. Thank you so much. And thank everybody for coming, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And good night.
Good night.
Thanks.
Good night.
Good night.
Ben. Wow.